Or are we on?
Yeah, we are. Okay.
I think Jeff, our producer, I think his heart just skipped a beat.
Is he breathing or what?
He's like, plug in the mic. Plug in the mic. All right. There we go. So we're back.
Slogging through the last two.
You know, I forgot to ask you.
What?
What'd you have for lunch?
I had a sub, and for dessert, I had some baklava.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. You have any left?
No. Ate it all. Okay. I love baklava.
All right. Next time.
You got it.
All right.
I'll save you some.
Okay, so welcome back, and we are now getting into, as we just did a few moments ago, we're going to get into some Active Directory domain services and what's new.
And this is the one you don't know, because I tried to draw that out of you yet last module.
What I don't know?
Attributes, where they all sit on users? Directory
so
services.
Here's the deal. Since I apparently don't know what Active Directory is and that it has attributes, I'm going to try to, you know, talk a little bit about some of this stuff and see what happens.
Trust me, he's an authority in Active Directory. He knows his crap. Don't worry about it.
All I know is that Rick is going to end up interrupting me again and again and again.
It's one of those things I'm passionate about.
That's
hypervisors
right.
And Active
What's
Directory.
What's not to be passionate about? It? All right.
Yeah.
That. Yes, he's passionate about interrupting Ed. Not passionate about. I do need to know. And I want the person who put it out there. I saw that we are now being referred to as Roadrunner and Wile E. Coyote. So I want to know who's who. Because I'm pretty sure I know. But let's find out for sure.
I'm the bird, for sure.
You're the bird?
You got it.
Have you heard the word? Nope. Bird is a word. Let's get started. So let's go ahead and jump into the slides here. And this, look at this. We're into the home stretch here. Ooh. We're on the second to last module. You know, don't put the camera back on, but show of hands, who's brain dead already? Oh, wow, everyone in my room just raised their hand. But anyway, okay, moving forward, what are we going to do here? We're going to talk about deploying Active Directory domain services domain controllers. We're going to configure, well, we'll talk about configuring Active Directory domain controllers, implement some service accounts. We'll see there's one very key point, one big change to service accounts in Windows Server 2012. We will talk about implementing group policy in Active Directory domain services and maintaining ADDS. And I will tell you, we're going to kind of blow through this and talk about, again, similar to some of the other stuff, we're going to make sure that you have a handle on all this stuff, because a lot of this is exactly the same as it has been in the past. But we're also going to then interject a lot of new stuff. And then specifically at the end, I'm going to go in and show you the new stuff, because I think the new stuff, I mean, personally, Rick, I think the new stuff is very cool.
Mm-hmm.
There are a couple of things that they have thrown in there that we actually saw in Windows Server 2008 R2, but it wasn't very easy to implement, and now it is. So we'll take a look at it. All right, so what's new? Just in general, Rick, what's new?
Well, you know, I'm doing a jump start today, and
that's not new.
You know, I had baklava for lunch.
Oh my goodness!
What's new with AD?
Yeah, what's new with AD? Well, we have some new deployment methods.
Yes, definitely some new deployment methods. I'm not going to talk about it now because you talk about it later, though, right?
Yeah. Well, okay. We can talk about it now, whichever we want.
No.
I mean, the big thing with the AD deployment is there's a couple things. One, that it now is completely deployable. Mm-hmm. I guess if you want to use that word, through Server Manager. Surprise.
Yes.
Right? You don't like Server Manager very much.
No, it's one of those my least favorite tools.
Yes.
Wink,
yes.
Wink.
What about, right? do you like to deploy via DC promo?
Well, believe it or not, if you go to the command prompt on a full GUI server and you type in DC promo after you install the binaries, it says, sorry, it's been deprecated.
Deprecated. That's the word of the week.
Use the server manager configuration process.
With one exception.
Unless it's server core, in which case you have to use DC
promo
with a switch.
Well, that wasn't the exception, but okay.
Server core, you got switches for unattended.
So. Unattended. That's the answer right there. Is you can use DC promo in your unattended installations, but that's it. So, so deprecated is your word of the week, and I've also determined that, it's not a role, it's a feature, is your phrase of the week. So.
Okay.
Good thing the week's almost over. It's only halfway, isn't it? All right, what else we have? We have simplified administration, and I think we can probably sum that up with one word that you've been using. This is not your word of the week.
One word, two syllables. First syllable sounds like hour, so it starts with a P.
No.
And then the second one is like seashell, power shell.
No.
PowerShell. Active Directory PowerShell?
No, that's two more bullet points down. See, this is where I get payback. I couldn't come up with Active Directory.
I'm not reading ahead in the slides.
How are we administering Active Directory now?
With PowerShell.
No. Through the GUI. How are we?
a duck.
A duck?
Active Directory's used in computers.
Really?
That's how I manage it.
Yeah. You don't want to use the Active Directory
administration? Oh, yeah. You can use that too.
Yeah. So that would be what? A DAC?
ACDC or ACAC.
ACAC.
ADAC.
ADAC.
That other,
band?
It's the other rock band.
Yes. Yeah. So, okay. So, yes. Simplified administration, I will say both. I'll give you your PowerShell.
Yep.
Obviously it's there, a couple bullet points down. And then also with your Active Directory Administration Center, which I will tell you, that's where we're going to go for part of the demo and see a couple of really cool things that we couldn't do in the past. And here, I'll tell you what, as much as I know we're just on pretty much the very first slide, and there's a whole list of bullet points here, and we have a whole long way to go, but there's this virtualized domain controllers.
Oh, yes. They actually came up a couple times already with virtualization from the morning session.
Yeah.
People were big, red, shouty, caps, locks, exclamation marks. Don't virtualize your domain controllers.
Wrong.
That is completely false. Wrong.
Don't virtualize your domain controllers unless you have Windows Server 2012.
As your hypervisor.
Yes.
And unless they are Server 2012 domain controllers.
Yes. And where I was going with this is, even though I don't have specific material that was included in the material that came with this, we could do an entire hour just on this, which is talking about virtualizing your domain controllers. And the reason is because they fixed it. Again, I think I hear this little yay. They're not yaying yet because, look, I'm pointing over here like there's somebody behind the curtain, but they're not yaying yet because they haven't learned why. But what was the big issue with virtualizing in the past? I mean, if you virtualize your domain controller and then you rolled it back with, you went to a snapshot, what was the big issue, Rick?
You just created what's known as a USN bubble.
USN bubble?
USN bubble, my
That's
friend.
That sounds like a fancy name.
Picture yourself in an environment where you've got 10 domain controllers and they're all in default first sight because you know how to design Active Directory.
And default first sight name.
Yes. And you've got your clients that go in and change their password. Mm-hmm. And then you have a junior administrator that goes in and takes one of those domain controllers and rolls it back in time to 2 weeks before. And the password was not expired and therefore not changed in that snapshot. And everything else seems to be fine. You then have that domain controller up and running. It doesn't know it went back in time previously, and it now continues to work. And things are going fine. But then this person randomly, once out of every 10 times they log on, they end up with the password denied, access denied. And mm-hmm. then they call and help us saying, well, once in a while I get this problem. You basically create a UNC bubble because replication algorithm for Active Directory does not account for a domain controller identifying itself to its replication partner and saying, hey, this is my USN level because this is what I know and this is where what level is for my high watermark for my replication. It simply continues on, and then here's the new stuff, and then the other guy says, here's the new stuff as well. Mm-hmm. He doesn't say, you're missing the last 3 days' worth of info. Here it is.
Besides the USN bubble, we have a whole separate issue that's created with it, and that is what's happening with, how does every object in Active Directory has what? Meaning, how does the system recognize it?
It has attributes.
Well...
Got you back. No, it has a SID.
It has a
which
SID.
Is based
and
on the domain SID and the RID.
And the RID.
You got it.
And so I have a RID pool. I have all these relative IDs as a domain controller that I'm handing out as objects are created. What happens if I have created, I took a snapshot, I create some objects, something happens, I roll back to this snapshot. What happens?
Your RID pool gets reinflated again because those objects were never created according to you because you're back in time.
Exactly.
And you now have 150 duplicate SIDs out there.
Right. Assuming I did 150
updates,
objects before we went back to the snapshot. So basically what we have now, and that's why, like I said, it's amazing that it's a single bullet point in what's new for ADDS, because this is massive as far as what's new, is we now have, and we really should have clarified, not just Windows Server 2012 domain controllers. and be on a Windows Server 2012 domain controller. But you also have to have a computer that supports...
A hypervisor that supports what's known as the VM generation ID.
Yes.
And that currently is hypervisor that comes in Server 2012. We've released the specs for what VM Gen ID is to our other friends in the virtualization space on the Citrix side and the VMware side. And they are working to implement that technology, if they haven't already implemented it, inside their latest revision of their hypervisor solution. So you're safe to virtualize your domain controllers, cease and desist with your worries and controls, provided you're using Hyper-V and provided you're using Server 2012 as your domain controller.
Yeah, and I will tell you, and I believe you've already referenced this. I believe you referenced it yesterday, but there is a session. It's actually a session that you did.
I stole completely and did twice.
Right, no, and I've done it as well, and yes. I stole it completely. So I don't know where they would find yours. I do know where they'd find mine at Train Signals blog, but to tell you what, let's give credit where credit's due, and quite
Channeline.msdn.com/events. Choose Tech Ed North America for 2012 and look for the
Dean
speaker,
Wells.
Dean Wells.
Yes, Dean Wells.
If you ever get a chance to see him talk, go see him.
Yes.
Awesome guy.
Yes, he is.
Great
and,
guy.
And to be specific, because he did do more than one session,
It
specifically is called What's New in 80. Although, and tell me if they've updated it. Originally, it was actually called What's New in Active Directory in Server 8. Because it was before we went to Windows Server 2012.
No, they've updated it.
They did update it. Okay, so you know what to look for. But the reason I'm really pushing for you to go out there and look at that is because of the... there's a whole layout. And like I said, it's over an hour long. And he spends probably 45 minutes just on this one thing. And there's a whole set of graphics and all kinds of cool stuff that he uses to demonstrate how this USM bubble and everything else is avoided. All right. So now that we've... gone through that, let's go ahead and jump back into what's new. As you mentioned, Active Directory module for PowerShell, and along with that is the Windows PowerShell History Viewer. And one of the things that's really cool about the PowerShell History Viewer, I made reference to this yesterday when you were going through PowerShell and we were talking about people who were not comfortable with PowerShell, is going through and doing something through the GUI the way you are comfortable, and then going back and looking at how... you know, or not how, but what PowerShell commands made that happen. And this is something that can be done through the Windows PowerShell History Viewer. Active Directory Federated Services, which is actually going to be in the next module, but it's there's just a few quick updates in there. And then we have Active Directory based activation. So what do you think? You think it's kind of cool to not have to have...
KMS servers out there?
Yeah.
I do. It does require a schema extension to be able to support that and some other stuff. And I've never implemented it. I've just seen it listed as one of the options you can include. To me, it's cool. The only people that can use that activation service, though, are Windows 8 clients and Server 2012 systems. They basically will do a lookup to your Active Directory as part of the activation process if they're using a volume key. And then go off and query, oh, it is enabled and it is extended, therefore I can activate myself there, and off they go. They get activated.
Yeah.
Cool stuff.
How cool is that? Join the domain, get activated.
Yeah.
Done. All right, moving along. Again, a lot of this is going to be stuff that's not, it's either something that you are already familiar with based upon experience with prior versions of Active Directory, or it's not it's something you're going to catch on like that, and that is basically that you can now install ADDS through Server Manager. It's not done through DC Promo, so another cool thing is that the binaries can be installed with PowerShell, or actually they'll just be... Actually, what I think is really cool is how it just goes through and checks everything for you.
Yeah, so they basically, we've built in all the prerequisite checks. Are you logged in to the infrastructure master? Are you do you have schema extension capabilities? Are you an enterprise admin? Do you have the rights to be able to go off and extend the schema? Has the schema been extended yet? All this stuff happens in the background to check to see if you're ready to go for your DC promo of your first 2012 box, as opposed to having to you go off and do AD prep 32/forest prep/whatever.
Yeah.
I remember what those switches were. I always had to look them up. It does that for
steel
you.
Steel vault,
now.
Right?
So basically, AD prep basically is now all part of that as well, looks after it, and off you go. So good stuff.
Yeah, very absolutely. Stuff. Moving along, there's then deploying ADDS domain controllers with Server Core, which is another cool thing. Being able to go ahead and is there really any server that shouldn't be on Server Core? I mean,
There are some that still are not supported for things that needs to be able to run, but
right.
the list is growing for all the stuff that is supported. So I think actually in... No, it's not the Dean's. It's a different session. They list off a nice little bullet point. I'll see if I can find that bullet point thing for you for what's supported on core, what's not supported on core. But
well, the good news in the context of here is that your domain controllers can be.
Yeah, totally.
And not only can they be, but you can install either via PowerShell or you can also do it through remotely through the server manager. That's another thing that makes it cool about
yep.
installing it in that fashion. Another way that we can install, boy, there's just so many different ways that we can install.
We've made it better and easier. The number one issue for Active Directory was deploying domain controllers, if you look at premier
sure,
support
sure.
issues. And so we made it as easy as possible.
Right. And it, here we have IFM. Now, we had IFM in the past.
IFM,
install from media.
Media,
yes.
Yep.
They knew what I was talking about because it's sitting right on the screen.
I wasn't looking at the screen.
Yes, I know you weren't. So here's what I'm going to tell you. The real short version of all the different things you're seeing there about how you can install from media is the bottom two. The bottom two, no longer having to be forced into doing an offline full defrag.
Which was quite onerous for people that had very large Active Directory instances. Their DIT files
yes.
were quite large.
Yes, I mean, isn't kind of the point of doing the off, installing from media is, to speed up the process of
mm-hmm.
installing, when the fact of the matter is when you were forced into doing the defrag, it might have been a longer install.
Now, you can still do the defrag if you wanted to with the switches for
sure,
for
of course you can. Matter of fact, that comes up later on in maintenance.
But,
you can do it if you want.
But you can choose not to, and it simply is going to have, the data, and then the online defrag leaves all the white space. That's all.
Absolutely. All right, so read-only domain controllers. Anything new? I don't think so. This is all pretty much the same thing we had before. Unidirectional.
Just
make sure you understand the point of what a read-only domain controller is. It's designed to put out in your branch offices where you don't necessarily have the level of physical security, the level of IT security, and
so on.
You're
worried and
so
about
forth.
The pickup truck backing into the wall of
yeah.
the strip mall and then walking away with your servers and parting them out. Those are the kind of things you want to protect yourself from.
Now, this is something that Rick, again, is like over-the-top excited about, so I'm not
this.
Even going to try to begin because he's just going to interrupt me anyway. And that is when I had to actually cut him off from talking about this when we talked about being able to virtualize domain controllers in the first place.
Yeah.
But go on, Rick.
Really simple. Really, really simple. Because we now have, we need to keep this slide up just so I
yes.
can be able to
so they can understand what they're looking at, yes.
With virtual entities now being domain controllers that are possible, the virtual domain controller now literally is just a VHD file, right? Or whatever file you're using for
yes.
your domain controller.
Or a VHDX file.
Yeah, VHDX yeah. file. You can now safely clone these virtual domain controllers and quickly deploy them. So in theory, I have an entire disaster recovery backup solution available to me to restore 10 domain controllers in less than a matter of a number of minutes because on a new system. Because I have the ability to create and spawn off 10 new domain controllers from this one clone. Now, for this to work, basically, you have a couple PowerShell commands you have to run, and then that's going to go in and, first of all, create the DC clone config.xml file, which contains what the new proposed computer account name should be, where the current PDC emulator is, network configuration settings and stuff like that to get the system up and working. And then it leaves it inside the same directory as where the ntds.dit file is located, wherever it is you happen to store that. It then goes in and basically shuts down the box. You can then go in and take that guy and copy him as many times as you need to. You have to add the computer account of the original clone to a group called, I forget the exact name, I think it's authorized domain control, clone domain controllers or something like that. You add the computer accounts to that particular group of as being an authorized clone. And then you bring that guy up for the very first time. And because it uses the same technology as snapshotting, it realizes, okay, well, I'm booting up. I was a new copy of a machine, and therefore my VM gen ID has to change. That's the attribute that's stored in the ACPI BIOS where it stores the VM gen ID. During the boot up process, the Active Directory looks up and says, oh, I have this DC clone config.xml file here. I got to go off and process this. And basically says, okay, well, it looks like I need to go in. I'm a clone. Am I authorized? Yes, I am authorized. Okay. I need to go off and find my PDC emulator and then talk to him. I have IP address configuration information. I am the clone that's coming up, and this is my preferred computer name I want to be able to use for a computer name. The PDC emulator is going to go off and basically grab and create a new computer object of the, based on the new computer name, give all the proper stuff it needs to in Active Directory for account information back down to that new clone. The clone's going to finish the configuration of itself with the computer information, the computer name, and the secrets, that sort of stuff, to be able to log in. That computer is going to go and basically dump its RID pool because it's brand new, and it's going to start the install, and it's going to start the install with install for media. The install for media, it's able to go in with install for media and start the individual process of booting up and populating the Active Directory, seeding the replication, if you will, with all those entries and then only the changes that are there. So comes up, finishes off, reboots, comes back up, and it's done. Repeat ad nauseum 10 times, and you now have 10 domain controllers completely now brought in and recreated or newly deployed, and you're off and running. No time flat.
You know what I'm just realizing is I haven't even been able to look at the Q&A during this module here, but it's obvious you're Roadrunner.
Lee actually said,
I should have spared them and I explained. No, that let me. Here's what I think of when
Wait. Lee, I got to say this. Scroll on the screen. Lee actually says that DC cloning is awesome. Suddenly, I feel all warm and fuzzy inside.
Well, first of all, DC cloning is awesome.
Yep.
And here's the funny
thing.
It's
safe.
You know what? Here's the funny thing. I think of chicken and the egg here. Do you think, and maybe you know, maybe you have context, someone you've talked to that you know, which was it? We had a problem, which is that we couldn't virtualize our domain controllers. And so the AD team figured out a solution to that problem. And then because of that solution, said, cool, we can also do cloning over here, which is going to be another really cool thing. Or do you think someone had the idea of, we really should be able to clone these machines and get fast deployments, and then when they learned how to do that, they said, you know, that's also going to fix our other problem with the snapshots. Chicken and the egg, which came first, right?
I have no authoritative information on that.
Of course you don't.
If I had to theorize what it would be, I would say it's probably the snapshots first, because that would probably be
You know, speaking of egg, I don't know why, but I was suddenly thinking of the egg just frying up on the counter, and remember in Ghostbusters when the egg was frying on the counter? And then she opens the fridge.
Yeah.
What was the name of that guy in the fridge?
Thule, wasn't it?
Zool. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
You got it.
Okay. Back to AD. All right. Upgrading. Should I just skip the slide? Keep it down over there. Yeah. Should I just skip upgrading? Don't upgrade.
No. Say it.
Say
it. Controllers
don't
running Windows
upgrade.
Server. You can do an upgrade in place from 2008 64-bit installs if you wanted to. We're not of the opinion you should be doing that personally. You should be doing a parallel installation, inserting
and then migrate.
And then basically promote the guy and then demote the old guys. That's the general way you should be doing it.
I think we both have many courses on how to do it.
You got it.
Yes.
You cannot perform an in-place upgrade on 2003. Why can't you?
I don't know, because they said so.
No? No, seriously, why can't you?
Why can't you what?
Why can't you do an in-place upgrade on 2003? Why can't you do an in-place upgrade of 2003?
Why would you?
Why can't you? I'm asking you. I'm challenging you.
It doesn't have... You can't. You got to come from...
You have to
be 2000...
You're overthinking it.
No. I don't even want to go from 2008 X64. I want to go only from R2. He's drawing me a picture. No. You're wrong.
X86.
No, you're wrong because there is an X64.
No one deployed that. X86 domain controllers. Obviously, you can't go upgrade
X86
to
X64. Are you guys seeing how this brain actually works?
Come on.
Here?
Let's go. Go, go, go.
Yeah. So, all right. So,
it's always funny how the jump start traditionally, the last couple of modules, just get crazy. You go shack wacky in here.
Fine.
Put the hat on. Let's go.
Wacky it is.
Okay.
Moving forward. Am I Don Knotts now? Is that what I heard? Oh, nice. All right, global catalog. There is, for all intents and purposes...
No difference.
Nothing different to talk about here.
You got it.
Global catalog is the global catalog. Understand that it's a subset of attributes of every object in the forest, and so there's potential replication ramifications, although, you know, just as we've learned even in Windows Server 2008... I have global catalogs everywhere. Do you have global catalogs? I mean,
based on my network bandwidth links for the different places I designed for, I would also have global catalogs over the place, with the exception of one design I did that had oil platforms.
Okay.
Because oil platforms needed a domain controller. There were 45 computers on each platform, and they needed to talk locally, and they only had 96 baud modem-type satellite uplinks.
The haze?
Yeah. the pig squeal of the initialization going on.
Yeah, okay. Well, speaking of, you know, totally related with the global catalog here is Universal Group membership caching. Again, nothing new. And we don't need it because there's global catalogs everywhere.
Yep.
But if you don't have a global catalog and someone's going to need access to Universal Groups, they can be cached. And again, let's move forward to stuff, the new stuff that they do care about, of which this is not. Right? Operations master. It's nothing new. We have our ForestWide, which is domain naming master. You have the schema master. And in your domains, you have your RID master, infrastructure master, and PDC emulator. And again, you know, in the name of time, because I'd rather take the time to show you some stuff that is new and cool, you should know this already.
Yep.
Functional levels. Rick's been waiting for this all day.
I have to do a mea culpa. I answered some questions.
Put the camera right on Rick and zoom in as tight as you can.
No, you can't zoom. I have to do a mea culpa. No, stay there.
You can zoom.
In.
Go ahead, zoom.
I erroneously got overexcited about the functionalities being decoupled for Server 2012 from functional levels of the forests, by saying that you could switch your forest levels with down-level domain controllers, which you absolutely cannot do. And mm-hmm. I should know that, so mm-hmm. I have to apologize. You cannot do that. You can have mixed levels. So you obviously can have a 2003 functional forest level and domain level and have Server 2012 put in there as another domain controller. But you cannot switch the forest functional level or domain functional level until you get rid of all those down-level domain controllers. Once you do go to that next level of functional level, you cannot add new ones. That's where I was heading with it. Mm-hmm. You cannot add new ones after you've gotten to switch that level. And you obviously can't go back. So, mea culpa. I apologize.
All right.
I will remove my Active Directory certification from my credentials.
All right, so put...
I'm in MSL. They actually can do that here.
Now that we've done that, and I will say that that was specifically for the sake of those who were here yesterday.
Yes.
The fact of the matter is that we have our domain and our forest functional levels. It is true that we have separated, even though there's new functionality, that's how the slide is still misleading, I think, because you don't have to be... They've now separated where you don't have to go to Windows Server 2012 function. You don't have to go to that functional level to get some of the different functionality that we've talked about. What does still exist, though, is that you cannot raise the functional level when you still have a domain controller. And I'll nip this one in the bud right now because of the questions were being asked yesterday, and I get them asked in every class that I ever hold. We're only talking about domain controllers, not member servers.
Right.
It's only about your domain controllers. You can have all the Windows Server 2003 member servers you want with the Windows Server 2012 functional level. It's only your domain controllers. If you still have a Server 2008 domain controller, you have to have a functional level that supports that. If you have a 2003 domain controller, you have to support that. And, of course, it's a given. That last bullet point almost is not needed. That's where I think it also gets misleading, is obviously if you can't raise the functional level as long as there's old ones, you certainly cannot add them as well. And I know that was a little redundant in what Rick said, but I wanted to make sure that they were seeing it, not just you.
The last major function that we added that was dependent upon functional levels is the Active Directory Recycle Bin. That was 2008 R2.
Yes.
You had to be 2008 R2 and you had to turn that option on.
Yes. And I believe that that is still true.
Right.
We were going to talk about the Recycle Bin in just a minute, but yep. It is still true. That, in other words, if we're talking about functions that existed in Server 2008, then you're going to have to be in an appropriate Windows Server 2008 functional level in order to get those features. Okay. Moving forward. Managed service accounts. Well, it was introduced in Windows Server 2008. It was 8 or R2?
R2.
R2. Says it right on the slide. Pay attention.
Yep.
The thing of it is that it was introduced, but not real heavily implemented. The basic gist behind these managed service accounts is the idea that you have a service and it needs an account to be able to determine what that service is allowed and not allowed to do as far as permissions. And you have a password policy in place that says you have to reset your password after a certain number of days, and that always became a problem in the old days when you would just have a service be run under some user account, mm-hmm. and then the password would have to be reset. It would expire.
Or you set it to never expire, and you therefore open yourself up to vulnerability.
Either one. I mean, right. either it did expire, and then you had a problem because suddenly a service stopped working.
Yeah.
I mean, the one that comes to my mind the most back in the old days was backup. Windows backup just suddenly wouldn't work.
Yeah.
Or, like you said, Next step is you go create an account and say password never expires. Problem. With the service account, it can automatically, within the system, without any user intervention, go ahead and reset itself one day before it was about to expire. The problem was is that it was tied to just one machine. Okay, so basically what was happening is you had to go ahead and create a service account for every machine that had a service that you needed to do this for. That brings us to the introduction of group managed service accounts. This is what's new in Windows Server 2012, and this is the short version, what's going to make managed service accounts actually usable, because as you can see from the illustration, if you're looking on the screen, and we're running short on time, so I'm gonna cut you off and don't interrupt here, because Rick is over here like big time, just trying to he wants to tell you all about it, because this is another one he's excited about. It's going to give you the ability to go ahead and have a single group, a single service account that is going to go ahead and be able to handle more than one server. And in the illustration, you can see it's going to handle an entire farm of servers. Now, I'll let you. Is there something very specific you want to say, or can we move on? Okay, he coughed. He's good. You all right over there? Have a drink.
I need some water.
Okay. Group policy. What's new? I'll tell you what. There's three bullet points. There's two that I really care about. It's not. I'm not saying the third one's not worth anything. It's because somebody's going to come charging in here from the AD team, from the group policy team, and say, what? But two that I'm really excited about are group policy infrastructure status, which I'm going to show you in just a moment.
Status.
In Canada. And remote policy refresh, which everybody is going to give a little yay to, because basically, just think of it this way. GP update, right? You made a change. GP update. Go ahead and force that to happen without having to log off and log back on or reboot the computer, right? But the big question that came up again and again and again and again is, how can you do this remotely? How can I, as an administrator, push this out to all my clients and make it happen right now? And there were, even today, I went out there and I looked up an article and I came across an old article. It was actually all the way back to talking about Windows XP clients. They talked about using GP update force and slash target, and none of those were actually forcing or targeting a specific computer that you were telling it to do. Those were different switches. The target was either users or computers, and force just meant force the changes whether it's a new policy setting or not. So now we truly can push this down to our clients. Beyond that, the third bullet point that we have on here is new RSOP, resultant set of policy, logging data, which I'm not going to go into a whole lot of detail other than, let's be real, we all know RSOP and it's extremely cool. Mm-hmm. Especially, my opinion, modeling is the one I love. The what-ifs. The what-ifs are my favorites. So now we have even more advanced RSOP logging data. When it comes to managing the GPOs, all right, here we're back to same old, same old. There is nothing new here to discuss as far as the group policy management center is what you're going to use. And I always thought of it as GPMT, the group policy management tool. And I find it funny that the official name, GPMC, is the GPMT. What do we do here? Create, edit, link, backup, restore, copy, import, the works. As far as group policy policy, forget it. Can't say a word now.
Yeah.
As far as group policy, now I'm becoming Roadrunner, talking way too fast. This again, I'm talking fast because this hasn't changed. This is the exact same stuff. LSDOU, as far as local, then site, then domain, then organizational units, and then we go, you know, I always say OU, 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 because you go down through the hierarchy. You also, within a container, you can have a precedence order. You got loopback processing, security filtering, and WMI filters. It's all the same stuff. Group policy client-side extensions, again, is essentially the same as what we saw in Server 2008. Short version of this is the idea of that the client is calling out for a set of group policies. It's looking to see what's changed, and that's something to be cautious about, by the way, as far as looking to what changed, because if a group policy setting hasn't changed, somebody with administrative rights on a local computer may be able to actually change something in between until that group policy setting is changed. But again, this is a pull type environment, same as what we've had before. Troubleshooting, as much as this has not changed, I still want to spend a moment on this here. When it comes to troubleshooting group policy, first of all, you have to understand, even though I just blew through it, and hopefully you do already understand because we previously already knew how to do this. This goes all the way back to Windows 2000. The order of inheritance, LSDOU, make sure you understand the order in which group policy is going to be applied. Security and WMI filtering could be in the way. And for that reason, use it sparingly. Along with that, and they don't have it listed here, I think it's coming up on another slide here, is things like enforced and block inheritance. Use them sparingly because very often they are affecting how group policy settings are actually working out. Replication could be that you have a replication issue where you've created a group policy object, hasn't replicated to all your domain controllers. Maybe your PDC emulator is not doing its job, and so therefore you end up with a user that logs in or a computer that turns on and gets the wrong policy. And then along those same lines could be policy refresh. In other words, maybe the refresh hasn't taken place out on the client. Best practices, plan. We say that across the board. Always plan what you're doing. Don't just do it. Create standard desktop configurations. Don't use the default GPO. GPO is really, because there's default domain policy and default domain controllers policy. Yeah. I believe yesterday you were playing around with the default domain policy.
And I was keeping it simple.
Yeah, I made a joke about don't we do everything in the default domain policy? No, that was a joke. Again, the inheritance modifications, block inheritance, and enforced. And I'm even going to add to that security filtering and WMI filtering. Use them sparingly. Use them when you have to, because if you plan appropriately, then you're good to go. You won't need to use those. Employ loopback processing when you have your special case scenarios, like a kiosk computer, things like that, where it doesn't matter what user logs in. You want a policy to be in effect based upon the computer that's being used. And implement a change request process, because, yeah, that's a big deal when you're going to make a change to a group policy object. You just have some random administrator go in and make a change, and then you're lost as to why certain things aren't working the way they're supposed to work. All right. I don't think there's anything that we're going to go into here with ADDS backup. It's the same thing as far as going through. Make sure that you understand the issue of authoritative and non-authoritative. Okay, so make sure that you understand that you're non-authoritative, which is considered the normal restore, meaning because you're not doing anything special. It's just going to get you to a previously known good state of Active Directory. Whereas authoritative is if you know that you need to mark a specific object that was deleted, and because it's going to be tombstoned, and so all that's going to happen if you restore a domain controller is it gets deleted again, go ahead and mark it to come back. Beyond that, again, this is the same old, same old. Here we get to the fun stuff. And in about a moment here, I'm just going to blow through this and go to the demo because, quite frankly, that's what you want to see is this demo. How does the Active Directory recycle bin work? Pretty much the same way as the recycle bin works. I mean, you delete something, it doesn't get deleted.
The biggest change is the fact that you've actually got a GUI interface.
Yeah, I'm
for
getting
it.
That. I'm stealing my thunder.
I'm stealing your thunder because I'm tired of sitting here not saying anything. So you've got
Jeff, do we have duct tape over there? All right. No. Yes. The big thing is that you now have a GUI. This was introduced in Windows Server 2008 R2. Yep. It was very cool, but we didn't have a GUI way of doing it, and therefore,
unless you had third-party tools, there were third-party tools that had some.
He has to say something.
I gotta say.
So therefore, it was not implemented. Why? Because people were afraid of PowerShell, and we don't need to be afraid of PowerShell anymore. But guess what? It's a win-win. Mm-hmm. You do it through PowerShell because we don't have to be afraid of it, or you have the GUI. Doesn't matter. All right. There is a demo here, but I'm actually going to finish this out and then go to the demo. There's a little bit here on what are ADDS snapshots. Please just keep in mind, the snapshots are not, we're not talking about virtualization. We're not talking about the snapshots and then being able to restore to those virtual, the virtual machine snapshots of a domain controller. We're talking about having the ability to go ahead and just take a snapshot of the configuration of exactly how Active Directory was, but this is not a form of backup because you cannot recover from it. In other words, you look at the bottom bullet point, it says recover data. Either manually re-enter it, meaning you can display the snapshot on another computer and then manually look at it and say, oh, okay, that's how we had this set up. Mm-hmm. Or you're going to go ahead and restore it from backup. You're not restoring. You cannot revert to a snapshot, not AD snapshots. I'm not worried about the database. And let's just get into the demo.
Yep.
All right. So give me just a moment here to switch over.
Can I talk now?
You can talk until I can get my machine running.
Okay. I was just checking through the questions and sort of stuff. People are asking about stuff. They've mostly been answering them as they come along, but...
All right.
Nothing really is popping up that's kind of catching my eye.
Okay, well, that's good because I have the demo up. So
Go ahead.
All right, so what I have on the screen here is my domain controller. This is the London DC machine. If I get rid of my server manager for a minute, you see this is London DC 1, so it's a domain controller. What I'm going to do is I'm going to go into not a duck, but that other band, ADAC, the Active Directory Administrative Center. Now, I will tell you that we probably could spend another hour going through everything in the Active Directory Administrative Center, but then again, it's so easy to use, we don't have to.
The welcome to the AD Administrative Center, those are all live links that we be pointing to .NET articles. There's actually one specific, just click on it, but don't go further down into it, for the dynamic access control. No, not that one. The main cube on the left
hand side. Are you over here?
No. Right beneath the learn more.
There
you go. That's the step-by-step.
Can you tell that we are just not on the same...
No. You know. That's the step-by-step for how to set it up and how to use it. And then on the right-hand side, that's, again, more articles specifically on dynamic access control.
Yep.
But you're here for the user management piece.
Yeah, we're going to come over here, and you can see that we have our domain, adatum, right? Or is that adatum?
Adatum, eh?
All right. And here's the deal. AD Recycle Bin. You want to see how easy this is?
Make a couple of use.
Oh, no, not yet. You want me to make stuff before? Well, you can make it whenever you want. It's when you delete it.
Yeah.
So I'm going to right-click, and look at this. Enable Recycle Bin. Or technically, if I would have just clicked on it, we don't... Where are my tags?
Down below, right there.
Next bin. Right there. Enable Recycle Bin. There it is. Okay, either way, take your pick. Here's the deal. Are you sure you want to perform this? Once it's been enabled, it cannot be disabled. So that is one thing that is still true. Same as Windows Server 2008 R2, is it is not enabled by default.
It would also give you an error out message here if you were not at the proper force functional level.
Yes.
And domain
good thing level. I am.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you do need to keep in mind that depending on exactly what's going on with your database, and if you have a lot of churn through your database, this will affect the size of your .dit file. So, that's the only caution. But reality is, I've never really
put it on for sure.
Yeah, I'm thinking just have it. So I'm going to go ahead and say okay. And when I do this, I want you to look right here in the D section, Development Domain Controllers. That's all I have, right?
Yep.
That was before I enabled it. If I hit refresh, because I don't feel like waiting, I now have deleted objects.
Oh, nice.
Now, to have some fun with this, let's go ahead and I'm going to right-click and I'm going to say, in my domain, I'm going to create an OU. And just real fast, call this test OU1. And I'm going to not protect it from accidental deletion, because obviously we're going to delete something here.
Accidentally.
Intentionally. Here's test OU1.
Make it nested. Yeah, make a couple.
All right, so inside there, I'm going to go ahead and create another OU. We'll call this test.
Call it fantastic people.
No.
There we go. Idiots. Nice.
And since that's how we so appropriately named that OU, we're going to create a user. And we're going to go ahead and just populate what we have to.
Oh, nice.
And we'll put in the Rickster. And by the way, my apologies to anyone else out there who goes by the name Rickster. There's somebody in particular I'm referring to here. Click OK. So, what do I have here?
You could have put CDN as my Twitter handle.
Yeah, Rickster, no, that's
CDN.
Okay. Just Rickster.
Okay, you're going to take great joy in deleting me, I'm assuming.
I'm going to take a ton of joy in deleting you. Matter of fact, I'm not just going to delete you. I'm going to go all the way back up to the domain level, and I'm going to delete just everything that is about you.
All the path leading down to me?
Yes, so I'm going to delete. Are you sure you want to delete this OU? Test OU1? Yes. At which point I get a message saying, you know, there's stuff in there. Are you sure you want to delete it and everything else? And I'm going to say,
I'm in there. I'm the stuff that's in there.
I want everything gone.
Nice.
And you'll notice it's gone. But at the same time, Whereas in the past, that was a big uh-oh. I didn't mean to delete Rickster. I only meant to delete the OU.
Fire up the authoritative restore.
That's right. You have to go ahead. Well, you got first you go through just a restore in general. Hope you have a backup.
Yeah.
Restore from backup, and then you got to go into NTDS util and all that fun stuff.
Yep.
Well, now you just simply go into deleted objects and look. Everything's there. Test OU1, idiots, and Rickster.
Okay, so just highlight Rickster and
You want Rickster back?
Yeah.
Fine. Right-click, restore. Eh. Operation cannot be performed. Why? Because your parents are gone, too. That sounded pretty vicious.
No, I did.
If you all could see the look that Rick just gave me.
You haven't met my parents.
So, you know, Rickster, if I right-click on him again and say, well, all right, you're telling me that the parents are gone, locate the parents. And it says, yeah, that's not fair. I don't know your parents, but apparently they're idiots. So I'm going to right-click on idiots and restore idiots. And idiot says, no, this operation can't be done. Why? Because the parent is still not there. Right-click, show me the parent. And by the way, you don't have to actually right-click and show me the parent if you know what it is already.
Yeah.
Here, test OU1 is there, so I'm going to right-click and say restore. It's been restored. To show you it's been restored, there it is, test OU1. It's back. If I go back to deleted objects, I'm just going to save some time here. If I try to restore Rickster, what's going to happen? I'm going to get another error message. I said I'm going to save time, and then I'm going to do it again because mm-hmm. I have a reason for this. I want to show you that what if I don't, maybe I don't think that Rickster's parents are idiots. I just think they're a test OU. Then what I'm going to do is I'm going to right-click, and I'm going to say restore to. Okay, so if you want to restore an object, like maybe I meant to get rid of the OU, but I didn't mean to get rid of the user that was inside of it, go ahead and restore it. Pick where I want to restore to. I'll go into the test OU. You'll notice in the deleted objects, Rickster is gone. I go back to test OU. There he is. That, to me, makes life just, it's a game changer. To have a true recycle bin to where you can delete something and it's just sitting out in a folder. And how long is it sitting out there, Rick? He's typing. For the tombstone, it's going to sit out there for
180 days.
Right. By default for 180 days, which is the default.
And then you got the garbage collection interval.
Yes.
Someone's actually asking that question.
About the garbage interval?
If I do the
that you are garbage?
Install from clone, how long should you let that sit around for before it spoils? That's my term.
Nice.
Wait for the garbage collection, the tombstone interval and the garbage collection interval, because obviously if it expires past that, your install from ED is going to fail. So it has to go in and basically do a brand new replication with someone else.
Cool. All right, so the next thing I want to show you is also something, and it wasn't even in the slide deck, but it's also something that is very cool. It was created in Windows Server 2008, R2. As a matter of fact, was it in 2008? I think it was. Was it only R2 for
passenger and objects?
Yeah.
2008 R2.
Yeah, it's just R2. Yeah. So, but again, it was a nuisance. We didn't have a nice, easy, friendly, GUI access to
it. What is wrong with ADSI Edit? I like ADSI Edit.
You like PowerShell.
I do. What does that say about me?
But I like PowerShell now, too.
Good.
All right, good.
I'll work on ADSI Edit on you next.
Here's the deal. If you want to do password setting objects, and just to make sure you understand what that is, in the past, if you go back to older versions of Active Directory, you could only do your password
based on
the domain.
Yep.
So we literally had new domains created for the sole purpose of giving other users... I'm really hot in this hat. It's gone. you could only give separate password settings by having a whole separate domain. Then we had our password setting objects, but we had to go to ADSI Edit. Now, if I just simply, under a datum here, that's the name of our domain, go into System and scroll down, here we have our password settings container. If I go inside there, either right-click or I can click over here in the task pane, either way, new password setting. Look at this. Boom.
Oh, it's
a form.
Nice.
So we can just go ahead and say, Rick's, can we use spaces and apostrophes and all that?
Yeah, yeah.
Password rules. With a Z.
Zed.
Actually, I'm going to get rules like that.
There you go, with a Z.
And then, for precedence, now this is really nothing more than if you have more than one PSO, which one's going to take precedence. So we just put it in a number, and it's a relative number. In the name of time, we're not going to do what I was going to do, which is I was going to have producer Jeff set all the different rules for Rick. But as you can see here, you can go through and set these. Okay, you all can should be familiar with these. You can set them, make them customizable. And then down here is who you decide who you're going to add this to. Now, typically, you would not want to do what I'm doing here. Okay, you don't want to add it to a user. PSOs should be done to groups.
Yep.
Okay, but in this case, just to show you what's done, I'm going to add it to Rickster. And there you go. Rickster now has his own set of password policy rules. Now, real quick, before we wrap this up, let me go ahead and close out of ADAC. And let's take us over into group policy management. In group policy management, which is hidden in the back here, if there's two things here very specific that I want to show you. Because other than that, most of this looks pretty much the same. It functions exactly as far as from an administrative perspective. When you're administrating it, you do it the same way. With ADATUM, when I just click on the domain, there is a brand new tab, did not exist before, and it's this one right here at the very beginning. It says status. And it says, this page will show the status of Active Directory and the sysfile replication for the domain as it relates to group policy. So it gives you the ability to see the status of your replication infrastructure with relation to group policy. So I'm going to go ahead and click Detect Now down in the lower right here. And you're not really seeing, this is like completely...
It's anticlimactic, you know, because you only have one domain
controller. Very anticlimactic. Because I only have the one domain controller and there is no replication in the first place, there's nothing really to see other than nothing's happening. But if you had an enterprise environment, this would be very cool. Rather than you having to go in and manually try to figure out how things are, if you're concerned that you got group policy replication issues, it's all going to be shown to you right here. And the last thing, and this is the super big, everybody can do a big yay, and I clicked the wrong button here. If I expand the domain and I go down to, and I'm going to pick the domain controllers OU because I need one that has computer accounts in it. Matter of fact, I will pick test OU just to show you what happens if you don't have computer accounts. Right click, group policy update.
Yay.
Thank you, Jeff. You have chosen to force group policy update on all computers within this OU and its subcontainers. Ah, but there aren't any. If I pick one that has computer accounts like domain controllers, this is the screen you get. It yep. says you've chosen to do this. Are you sure you want to? And it's telling you, by the way, there's only one computer going to be affected. Again, I only have the one domain controller.
Yep.
I click yes, I want to do it. You get to see it happening. And you see that one succeeded, and it's London, D.C. 1.
And what this is actually doing under the covers, basically, it's doing a remote management call to that box, the domain controller is, and it's equipping it with a scheduled task to basically do a GP update slash force. And it does the same thing for users that are logged on to that particular machine as well,
mm-hmm.
in case you're wondering. I got that response from,
yes,
from the group policy team.
He insisted on getting that answer today. That
so
is exactly what's happening. All
we're
right.
over time, my friend.
I know. Like, we got 3 minutes over time.
We'll be back right after this with a short break. I believe there actually is satisfaction poll. How did you like this particular jumpstart? It's not about the humor. It's about the
wait.
It's about the quality.
Wait.
Hopefully,
how'd
you
like this jumpstart?
There you go. Hopefully, you're finding this information useful to you. Again, if you stick around after the break for the next module, we will also be having a bonus section talking about how to do some prep work, what we've done in the past for passing exams. In there as well. So after the break, it's going to be a short break, probably 10, 15 minutes or so, and then we'll be back on live to cover off Active Directory Federation services. Thanks, man. That was fun, AD.
That was a lot of fun.
You got it.
I love AD.
See you after the break.